Hi, and welcome to Film Forums. I'm Richard Williams, creator of this platform, a place dedicated to the filmmaking community. We interview members of the film industry to find out what it really takes to make a movie, bring a script to screen, or secure that acting role. If that sounds good to you, please subscribe to us on YouTube and follow us on your favourite podcasting platform. Thank you. Today's guest is Jim Page, film and TV editor. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, not too bad. First question then, what gets Jim Page out of bed in the morning?
That's a very good question, and I'm not sure the answer every day, to be honest. Sometimes nothing gets me out of bed. The truth is, I suppose, is that I feel like this is kind of a bit of a privilege, really. I know that sounds maybe a little bit arty-farty, but I think the idea that I can go to work every day and tell stories for a living and play and kind of work with really creative, amazing people and then, you know, make something that then people will enjoy, hopefully, or make them think or whatever. You know, that's way better than, like, you know, doing a proper job. You know, I've done other jobs like working in a supermarket or like painting and decorating or that kind of stuff. And, you know, there's pros to those kind of things. And I know my back would probably be in a better position. I'd be healthier probably if I wasn't sitting at a computer all day. But I think I would be unsatisfied if I didn't have some outlet for whatever creativity I feel I have, I suppose. So that's what gets me out of bed every day is knowing that I can, you know, spend my time doing something that I love.
When did you realise that you wanted to become a film editor? And when did you realise that you were actually good at that?
When I was younger, I wanted to be a vet. But then I realised I wasn't going to be able to cope with the illness side of it. And then I became quite seriously ill and left school early. And so I sort of felt I was a bit kind of aimless, really, for a while. But I knew when I was younger that I used to enjoy writing and I used to enjoy telling stories and stuff. And I loved films, absolutely loved films growing up. I used to watch Star Trek films with my dad and, you know, films were always on TV. So I went to do a media course just sort of as something to do, really. I wasn't really sure what I was going to do with the rest of my life. I sort of fell in love with it, really. I fell in love with the technical side of it. I fell in love with the kind of collaborative side of it, the working with people. And the course we did, which was led by two, like, great lecturers, Terry Foster and Irene Irvin, who I'm still friends with to this day, who I still consider mentors to me. It was a very practical course. And so you got to make things and make lots of mistakes. And it was a very kind of, for me personally, a very kind of revelatory kind of period. It kind of got me out of my shell. As I said, I was ill for a long time. So I felt a little bit kind of socially stunted and, you know, I made friends and all, you know, all that kind of stuff. But we actually ended up making a feature film as part of the course. And I ended up editing that. And that's when I realized this is what I could do for a living, because I really enjoyed the directing side of things, but it was a lot more stress to me. It was a lot more kind of uncertainty, whereas with an edit, and also a lot less time to kind of get what you wanted done, really. Whereas editing, I always felt like I was playing in a sandbox. I was given all these things to do. It was like baking almost, giving all these ingredients and trying to come up with something good. So yeah, so that's what we did. And then that film won a Royal TV Society Award. And that got me in as an assistant editor at the BBC for like 6 months or so, working on daytime TV shows like To Buy or Not to Buy or Homes Under the Hammer, that kind of thing. Country File I worked on for a while. And then I went freelance and just did everything. Just everything I could, really.
Yeah, that's cool. And can you explain what a film editor actually does, perhaps for those who are considering it as a vocation or just starting out?
In terms of what editing is, I mean, it's a very big question, and like long books have been written about it. But essentially, editing is on a macro and a micro level telling the story. So you are telling the story 25 frames or 24 frames a second, but you're also telling a story on this bigger scale, whether it's a half an hour program or a 45 minute TV drama or a 90 minute feature film or whatever. So it's telling a story in moments which add up to being a bigger thing. Now, what's difficult about editing is the lines are quite blurred between where directing starts and where editing finishes. And so, and the best sort of films are the ones, I think, where there's a combination of both, where the director has an idea, has planned it to be a certain way, and then the editor either kind of makes that better or changes it in a way that kind of works. So, you know, without getting into the technical side of stuff and you know, which I think has been talked about ad nauseum, to me, editing is the purest form of cinema. It is what cinema, what differentiates cinema from the other art forms, really. You know, the combination, the adjunction of images, moving images from one to the next, and how that makes you feel, what a certain frame before or after changes how you see that collection of images. And I find that endlessly fascinating, to be honest. And it's a weird kind of alchemy, and it's very difficult to explain what it is. A lot of it is very instinctive. But I think every director and producer who's worth their salt understand how important editing is. And a lot of them like to do some editing so that they understand it better and they can kind of make their decisions better. Because everything you're doing on a film set ultimately is all about providing material for the edit to then create the film. And there's so many films you can come up with examples where things have been made or saved in the edit or changed so fundamentally that, you know, you can't underestimate how important that is. Now, obviously, to the general public, you know, it's just sticking shots together, isn't it? But it's a much deeper thing than that. And it's kind of essential.
Yeah, thank you for explaining that. I think that's a really good point for many people who may not be aware of just what goes into the filmmaking process, really. Yeah.
It's odd because actually what you don't want people to notice the editing. Like with cinematography, there is a certain element of, oh, isn't that lovely and beautiful? And that's because obviously it's a very visual thing. And it's, you know, you want people to go, oh, wow, that looks amazing. But with editing, you don't want people to notice, because as soon as they notice the mechanics of the film being made, they're not watching the film, they're watching the making of the film. And that's the last thing you want as a storytelling.
Yeah. You've got quite an amazing list of clients on your portfolio. If anyone goes to visit Jim's website, you'll see that very, very quickly, it's a case of name a big brand and you've probably really worked with them. Has it been a bit of a snowball effect? So the more big brands that you've worked with, the more work you get, and it goes from there.
Yeah, so I mean, my focus has always been on like working in films and working in drama, but along the way, I kind of certainly in building up, I started off, as I said before, working my way up, doing anything really. I was living in the Midlands at the time. There was a job in Battersea in London for someone to edit basically put together the results of the lottery ball. You know, the balls come out of the machine. These are the results, put it online. And it wasn't very much money, but it was a job and it was something to do. So I would drive down about 9 o'clock at night, get there for about 11, edit this thing together, which would take about 15, 20 minutes. And then I'd drive back. So like in terms of like my hourly rate, it was pretty good. But of course, I also had like a 4 or 5 hour round trip to get there. But it was that sort of thing you had to do, I think, because you just have to sort of take the opportunities and then you can go, then you can point to people and go, well, okay, no, I've not necessarily done much, but I've done that, and I've done that, and I've done that little thing. I had a great sort of ongoing relationship with the Daily Telegraph newspaper had a fledgling kind of online presence called Telegraph TV. And it was almost like a boot camp in filmmaking, really, in that I went out in the morning and filmed a piece, whether it was an interview, a VT, like a little kind of semi-news item. The afternoon, it would be edited, I would edit it, and then I'd put it online. So, you know, through that, I was able to kind of connect with people and get better at what I was doing. And then it was just sort of through osmosis, really, a lot of this, is by chance, you contact someone. I did some Disney store videos, and then someone saw that and thought, oh, that's all right. And then they gave me a job doing something else. Then I worked for one company in particular where I did a lot of stuff for Samsung and Amazon and, you know, still freelance, but sort of working my way and doing lots of different things. So that was, you know, one strand of what I was doing. And a lot of that was sort of paying the bills while I was doing short films and sort of working my way up to doing features. And at the same time, I was working my way through factual TV as well. So I was doing daytime TV shows, and eventually I started doing documentaries and that kind of thing. Again, it's just kind of pushing on doors and waiting and hoping for them to open, really.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would be forgiven for thinking you might be maybe a little bit arrogant for dropping the names that you have from the clients that you've had. But I don't sense that from you at all. I sense a sort of a quiet confidence. You know you're good at what you do, and you kind of just get on with the job and let your work speak for itself.
I suppose you'd have to ask other people whether I'm arrogant or not. I don't think I am. I suppose it's all contextual, isn't it? It's like recently I was offered something which I'm not going to do because I didn't think it was that good. But 15 years ago, I would have jumped at it because it was something to do. Whereas now I'm maybe a bit more selective about certain things. And I don't think that's arrogance. I think it's just that you've got your time is a finite resource. And certainly as you get older, you have less energy and less kind of ability to like bandwidth in your head. And so you want to be kind of selective about certain things. So I mean, you know, obviously working on Disney thing was fantastic and brilliant. I'm not someone going, oh yeah, Amazon, Samsung, whatever. You know, I reckon they're the biggest, basically the biggest companies in the world, and I was doing stuff for them, which is amazing. But when that's what you do, that is, like at the moment, I'm working on EastEnders for the BBC. And I've also got a feature coming out soon. And I'm obviously very excited about both of those things, but I come to it in a different way than I would have done 15 years ago when I was first starting out, because obviously I've got all this experience behind me. It's not overawing in the way that maybe it would have been 15 years ago. So yeah, I think it's all context.
And before this interview, you mentioned that the actor and former wrestler, Dave Bautista, has endorsed the short film Quiet Courage, which you edited. I'm fascinated to discover how that happened. How did that come about?
The lead actor, Amit Shah, was in a film with Dave and became really good friends with him. And he showed it to him and Dave liked it. It's as simple as that, really. You know, what's amazing about this business is actually how kind of tiny it is and how, you know, the whole 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon kind of thing. The more work you do, the more kind of connections you make and the more kind of one or two away you are from Tom Cruise or Tom Hanks or whatever, you know. It's kind of, it's crazy. It's like I work with a filmmaker a lot and he has projects in development with David Fincher. And those projects are things that hopefully I'll be working on. Now, to me, that's spectacular. That's amazing. But to him, it's like, oh, that's just my friend David Fincher. Do you know what I mean? So it's intriguing, you know, how small the world is, really. I kind of made a mistake exactly, but I was less guarded with what I said about or to people earlier on, not realizing that, not that I was nasty about people necessarily, but just that I maybe said things earlier on in my career that maybe hurt me. I don't know, in that I was maybe too honest or too unguarded about certain things to one person who, you know, might have known someone else who might have known someone else, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I've definitely become, certainly on Twitter, I've become less vocal about certain things.
Yeah, I think we can all learn a thing or two about that, to be fair. It's just amazing that you can name drop the names that you have, really.
No, it's cool. I mean, I'm a massive wrestling fan, and to have Dave Bautista even watch it is amazing, but for him to like it is great.
Oh, I think that's fantastic. The director of No More Wings, Abraham Adeyemi, a film you edited and the winner of Tribeca 2020, was mentored by none other than Sam Mendes. Who was your mentor or major influence on you when you were growing up? And what did you learn from them?
I don't think I've had like one single mentor. I've had like people at different stages of my life who I've kind of, I think, learned a lot from. And I think one of the things I try and do now is be an active mentor for people who are maybe lower down on the career ladder than I am. I'd say probably the first person I'd mention would be, I think I've mentioned him already, Terry Foster, who was my lecturer at college. And he was, or is, you know, a great friend of mine. And he was very, very direct and very harsh. And I left school early, was very sensitive, very, kind of troubled, really. And his way of dealing with that was to kind of almost beat me up, to kind of almost like a boot camp kind of thing, to kind of harden me up a bit, I think. But in a way that is very kind and very kind of, you know, there is a means to an end kind of thing. And he was a brilliant influence on me, brought me out of my shell, maybe too much, and really helped me get some confidence in myself to be able to move forward and achieve things. So I'll always be grateful to him and Irene and Ken, who worked there as well. You know, these really brilliant people who went out of their way, worked way well after their hours, and you know, they treated it as a vocation more than a job. And then there's people who have just sort of taken a chance on me and have become really good friends. People like Nev Pierce, who I've done 4 short films with. He's a great friend. He's very wise about the business. You know, he used to edit Empire magazine, and now he's a filmmaker in his own right. I respect and love him for his honesty, but also his sort of insight into things. And you know, I guess you learn from every filmmaker that you work with, for good or bad, really. And often you are kind of in this, a bit like Tom Hagen in The Godfather. You're like the consigliere of the director. You're there as a counsel. They kind of confide in you for certain things, and you get a lot out of that, really, in terms of seeing another perspective and advice. And so yeah, those are the names I'd probably mention.
Getting technical just for a moment, can you give us an idea of your current setup?
in terms of equipment, so like software, Adobe, Final Cut, DaVinci. And do you find yourself having to upgrade your equipment every couple of years or so to account for things like 4K, improved processing power, that sort of thing?
I work on a Mac Pro, a 2013 Mac Pro, which is, what, 6-7 years old now. So I'm happy to work with 4K and 5K and all that kind of stuff, and I've done lots of that. I'm working on several things at the moment. But I tend to kind of, on a day-to-day basis, edit with lower res stuff just because it's just a bit smoother. I have three screens here. The idea of having three screens is more ergonomic, really, is I've got more space. I can kind of look at things. And I'm working off Thunderbolt 2 RAIDs, which is like lots of storage. So, yeah. And, and I use Avid and Adobe Premiere. I'm sort of trying to learn how to use Resolve for editing. I've used it for color grading, but I've not used it for editing yet. Because the thing about it is you need a kind of a quite low pressure job to kind of learn how to use software, because you don't want to slow down the process. So, oh, well, I'm sorry I'm going slowly. It's because I'm learning a new piece of software. And they're like, well, why do I care about that? I wanted the film 2 weeks ago, you know, that kind of thing. But, it, you know, it, the thing about technology is you can kind of do an awful lot of it just on a MacBook, you know what I mean, or a small laptop. I think an awful lot is placed on kind of specs of computers. And, I'm a geeky guy and I love, you know, the idea of this new graphics card and all that kind of stuff. But realistically, offline editing, you don't need a super duper computer anymore because you can use proxies and stuff. You could do an awful lot with very little. So I think people starting out are like, oh, I need to buy £1,000 computer to do this. Like, you don't actually. If you're smart about it, you don't. You just use the resources you've got, I think.
Well, I think that's extremely encouraging for people to hear, those who want to embark on a career in filmmaking, but maybe think it's a bit of a financial barrier for them if they need to invest in a really expensive laptop or equipment. Actually, that's not the case.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think like if I was starting out now, I would probably buy like a £500 laptop, like mid-range laptop, and I'd probably use DaVinci Resolve because it's free. And it's free, but also it's not just free, it's a kind of beginning to end system. So you start off with editing, you've got color grading, you've got audio mixing, you've got visual effects. You can learn an entire film studio's worth of information in just doing using that one piece of software, and it's free, which is amazing. And the thing is, you can learn a huge amount of stuff off YouTube and tutorials and stuff, but the only way you can really learn is by getting some footage, putting it together, seeing if it works or not. And yeah. There's sort of no, Malcolm Gladwell always talks about 10,000 hours, which is the time it takes for you to get good at something. And there really is no way around that. You've got to put in the work. Yeah. Despite appearances, I do know that it's like being at the gym, is that you can't go from no reps to 1,000 reps straight away. You have to build up. Sometimes you get people asking you to do a job and they'll offer like a very low rate. And I do things for much less than my rate sometimes, depending on how much I like the project. But when you talk to them about the rate, you sometimes get kind of answers back about, you know, why do you charge so much? All you're doing is X, Y, Z. It's like, well, I'm not charging you for the 2 or 3 days that I'm working on it. I'm charging you for the 15 years and the 2 or 3 days it's taken me to be able to do it in that time and do it well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if I was starting 15 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to do it as well or as quickly or whatever. So it's, you know, I think it is a business and you have to kind of value yourself, back yourself. That's what I was told recently, back yourself. And I'm starting to learn that lesson, I think.
Rightly so. I think that's a really, really good point. What challenges would you say you've learned to overcome in particular as a film editor? So what advice would you kind of pass on for mistakes to avoid, that sort of thing?
I think confidence has always been a big problem for me, just generally. And I think because of the nature of our business, it's very kind of competitive, and you know, you're very good friends with people while they need you, and you're not necessarily top of their list of people to speak to when they don't. And I think that's partly the nature of the business and partly the nature of certain personalities who are attracted to the film and TV business. I know that I've made some amazing friends, and I also know that I've had some heartache from this business because of thinking certain people are what they aren't. And so I think coming into it, I think I probably would have been more circumspect about who I got close to, maybe, or tried to get close to, and try and think a bit more coolly about relationships with people. A good bit of advice someone gave me once was that if you're shooting a film, you should never get too excited about a good shot and never get too down about a bad shot. And I think that advice applies to sort of all elements of everyone's life, really, I think. And I think it's something I try and try and deal with. When I first started out, I was so desperate for people to kind of accept me as being capable that I pretended to know more than I did. And I think people found me out quite quickly, or at least were put off by that. And I think if I was, the advice I get when I do like lectures and stuff for people, the thing I say to them is, no one's expecting the runner to know anything, really. They're expecting them to be really enthusiastic, and they're expecting them to do the job quickly and well. And there's no shame in saying, I'm sorry, I don't understand. Could you explain that to me again? Only the biggest arsehole would say, oh, how dare you ask me again that question? You know, this is not the 15th century. These are not kings. They're production managers and they're producers and they're directors. Do you know what I mean? It's not a problem for you to not know the answer to something. And actually, people would rather you said, I'm sorry, I don't know, than not know and pretend and get it wrong. Same with like schedules, I'd rather say to someone now, I can't get this done for another 3 weeks than say 2 weeks and let them down. And I think that's a lesson it took me a while to learn was, you know, people would rather you be realistic than, hopeful, but then fail. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that you can't say, when someone says, oh, do you know how to do this? You can go, yeah. And then quickly go and work it out how to do it. If you feel like you can, then that's absolutely fine. But there's certain things you can't do that with. And I think you have to make a judgment call. And I think also, the biggest bit of advice I'd probably give is do as much work as you can, even if you think it's going to be shit, especially if you're starting out, because there's so much you learn from everything. Especially, you know, the things I've learned from really bad short films that I'll never show anyone that I can apply now. I'll come back to it again. I'm not overawed by, you know, £1 million, £2 million budget feature film now, because I've done so much work on things that perhaps you've not heard of. You know, I worked out the other day that I've cut about 3,500 drama scenes across all the short films and the features I've done, which is a lot, really, which is kind of a lot. And so when I come into a show like EastEnders, which is a very fast-paced show where they're shooting 7 or 8 scenes a day, and you've got to edit them as you go along and then assemble. You know, you've only got 2 or 3 weeks to assemble 4 episodes, which is like 80, 90 minutes of, you know, primetime TV. If I was coming into this 10 years ago, maybe I would have been like, oh my God, what am I going to do? There's so much footage. But because I've been through other projects, I don't feel that way. And so the more you can do, the more you kind of build up your calluses, I suppose, and build up your confidence about being able to do stuff. Really, it's only in the last couple of years where I felt, you know what, actually, I think I'm quite good at this. I think we're all in a learning process, and hopefully I will continue to learn because I want to get better.
That's a brilliant way to end, I think. So I'd just really like to thank you, Jim Page, for your time. I've really appreciated it, really enjoyed it, and I think it's going to offer a lot of value to our listeners, watchers and readers. So thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to us on YouTube and follow us on your favourite podcasting platform. Visit film-forums.com for more.